Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed, so I call your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and you're also here with my co-hosts, Tom Gould and Melissa Gould.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Hello, Tom and Melissa. How are you tonight?
Doing pretty well. You know, I heard you on the podcast earlier this week, and they were talking about this being a podcast. Now, you know, for the years, I've been figuring, oh, we're doing a radio show. But then Melissa looked up on her podcast thing, and there we are on podcast. So are we a radio show? Are we a podcast? How does that?
Well, you know, the advantage that we have, we are a live radio show. So in podcasts, they're recorded, you know, and then they put them out, you know, periodically, usually a couple of weeks after they film. After they record. So our advantage is that people can listen live or they can listen, you know, afterwards. And by listening live, you know, that people can call in with questions and to speak to the guests, what you can't do on a podcast.
Yeah.
So we have the best of both worlds. And now, you know, BBS Radio, who we broadcast through, also streams this to various sources that podcasts use, you know, so in that sense, people might listen to us and think we're a podcast, but we are a dinosaur, so to speak. We're a live radio show. So,
and so it is lovely that people can phone in if they're.
That's right. And by the way, if you want to phone in, the number here is 888-627-6008. And as since we are live, we want to hear from you. So please call us if you want to share an experience or if you had a question about the afterlife. We'd be happy to venture our opinion. Between the three of us, we'll come up with something, right? We usually do. I want to mention at the top of the show, we normally don't do announcements, you know, but we started a raffle drawing, our holidays past raffle with, and Laurel and Jackson graciously offered to donate a 1 hour phone reading to a lucky winner. So that's in full swing, and you can purchase an entry via our website.
How much are the tickets, Bob?
Tickets are $25, you know, and of course there are, you know, other denominations as well. But we know that Laura is enormously gifted and enormously popular. So this is an opportunity to get a reading from somebody that you normally wouldn't be able to, you know, to get one. So
absolutely.
And there's plenty of time. We started it early. So you have until the end of December when the drawing is, you know, to get on board. We have some questions that people have written in. Here's one. Well, I think I'm going to let Melissa answer this one. It's have you heard of anyone or in your own experience used a pendulum to speak to your loved one? I seem to be getting energy from that, you know, with her daughter, you know, in spirit, so she's curious. So I know that you've used pendulums before, right?
Yes,
but I don't recall using it as a tool to communicate with a loved one. But
well, I don't know who asked that question, but it was at our last grief retreat in Connecticut that one of our attendees and I had this discussion.
Oh, really?
Yes, and she was very interested in getting her daughter's take on certain issues in her life. And I suggested she try using a pendulum. And I happened to have one with me, so I demonstrated for her how one could ask a question. And just for anyone who doesn't know, you can really use any, you don't, I happen to use some sort of crystal on a chain. I could go get one right now, but I won't. And determine for yourself which direction when it swings indicates yes by asking just an ordinary question, like, is my name Melissa? And determine which direction on your pendulum it goes, and that would be your yes response. And then you ask a question that the answer would be no to, and see which way it goes. So for myself, and this is what I demonstrated with our guest, was that away from me, kind of like nodding my head means a yes, and then left to right kind of to me is a no. So I use it, and I also explained that I don't use it frivolously, and I also don't repeatedly ask a question, the same question, just to see if I get a different answer. I put my faith in my crystal. And I happen to really value it as a tool. So I tried very hard not to use it frivolously. I did ask when the last lottery, we don't typically buy lottery tickets, but when that number got so high.
Yeah, a billion is your cutoff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I asked, I pulled out my pendulum and I just said, should I purchase a ticket? And the response was no. So I went with that. It has for me, and again, now in answer to this person who's asked the question, I don't ask who I'm speaking with. I feel like I'm connected to myriad of my loved ones in spirit. I've never actually asked or tried to figure out if it's a specific loved one or not. I may do that now. I may do that. But in this case, with the my own pendulum, what I have done on three occasions, I have had friends who are expectant grandparents, and they've expressed to me, oh, it better be a girl. It better be a girl. This is just one of them. And my pendulum said it was going to be a boy. And so I wrote that down on my phone, which dates it. And I just thought, okay, down the road, when that baby's born, we'll see. And yeah, it was a boy. And I did it two more times with other friends, and it was accurate every time. So again, I don't want people to be silly or frivolous if you're going to delve into it at all. Take it seriously.
But it's interesting you should bring that up right now, because when we were at the Connecticut retreat, after the retreat was over and we were staying over at the guest house, the three mediums who were there and some of us who were sticking around decided to try, I guess the term is table tilting, where you put your hands on a table and it'll move or whatever, something that I had never actually seen. Melissa has done it when she was a kid, and it was really remarkable how what happened, because the table started rattling, and depending on the spirit coming through, the rattle was different, but it was all, you could ask questions and it was all yes or no questions. If the answer was yes, it would rattle. If the answer was no, it would stop rattling. Melissa has an old table that I think the table they actually used to use when she was a kid for that, and thought that, well, that was fascinating. So we have been trying, the two of us, I don't think two people is enough to make it work, but we set a time every week. We spend a half an hour at the table and seeing if anything comes through. And then I was thinking, well, if you're asking yes or no questions of spirit, I said to Melissa, why don't you be using your crystal? Because that answers yes or no questions, and we know you don't need a bunch of people for that to work. We're still trying with the table. We haven't done it with the pendulum yet, but yeah, I think that's something that maybe we should experiment with. Yeah.
Well, look, it makes sense. You know, I mean, what you're trying to do is what the Fox sisters, you know, did in the 1800s, you know, with getting yes or no answers, you know, with table tilting. So there's a long history of that. So if spirit can do things like table tilting or levitations or, you know, Ouija boards or, you know, things of that nature, then the pendulum is just another tool for right psychokinesis, where they can move physical objects with their mind or consciousness. So I don't see why it couldn't. I was laughing to myself because, you know, Melissa is warning us, you know, not to use it frivolously. And I recall many years ago being in a casino with a bunch of FFF volunteers, not mediums, and one of them had a pendulum, and she was walking up and down the aisles of the slot machines, you know, and she was waiting, you know, for the pendulum to move to let us know which machine to play, and the rest of us idiots are following her, you know, and the whole time the pendulum, you know, never showed any movement in one direction or another. So she just decided, you know, not to play. You know, I thought, okay, finally I'll have a system, but no, that didn't work out. So, you know,
maybe it worked really well. Did anybody win while she was dead?
Anybody in the casino?
Well, no, nobody played the slot machines. I was ready to, I don't play slot machines, but I was ready to do it because I'm open to anything. But maybe it didn't work because that was a frivolous thing. It wasn't to communicate with spirit, you know. So maybe our intention wasn't pure, right?
Maybe that's true. And yeah. One more thing I want to add, Bob, and at our retreat, we know when he had a facilitator discussing left brain, right brain activity. And it did occur to me after hearing that talk that perhaps I should be experimenting with holding the pendulum with my non-dominant hand.
Oh, okay. That's
wonderful. I'll let you know. I'll explore further with that.
All right. And that's why we call you an afterlife explorer.
Right. That's right.
You both explore. So some people wrote in with personal experiences. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to share our beautiful story of heavenly signs. My daughter, Andrea, passed away on April 22, 2021, of a fentanyl overdose. Her loss affected our family so much. She was always loved for anyone who would have, you know, take the time to know her. A book that I read suggested we should ask for specific signs that are personal and related to our loved ones. When my daughter was little, she found a glass stone in our yard and gave it to me, saying it was a good luck stone, and I should always carry it with me, which I always did. I decided to ask for glass stones as signs that she was okay and close to me, and as of today, I have received more than 7 glass stones.
Wow.
My angel from heaven has sent me heavenly stones to show me that she's okay.
Wow.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I don't know when the last time I have even seen a glass stone, and for her to get 7 is remarkable.
Yeah, it's not, I agree. It's not something that you normally find, right? I mean,
I recall one appeared here, and if it's the same type that this person is referring to, the kind that are used at events in, we would put them at some of our FFF events when we had table settings.
Yeah.
And scattered them on the table. So perhaps she's referring to that kind of stone. And yeah, that's remarkable and a wonderful sign from her daughter. So unique.
Yeah, and yeah. Interesting because you mentioned the raffle with Jackson. That's one of her main things in her book about signs, is to ask for a sign that is unusual, that you wouldn't see every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, she picked an aardvark, and then all of a sudden she's seeing aardvarks. So this, to pick the glass stone is pretty specific, and then to find 7 of them is really special.
Yeah. Another person writes that I was in a bookstore with my daughter looking at spiritual themed books. I found one title that caught my eye. When I got home, I laid it on the table. My husband said, "I see why you got the book." I said, "Why?" And he said, "Look at the author. Same full name as my son," which I hadn't seen that at the bookstore.
Wow.
So that she had bought the book, but she had no idea that the author's name was exactly the same name as her son. Then she said, another sign was visiting a friend. We approached our electrical car to leave. And the car was all closed up and locked, but they found the trunk up and the windows were all down. She said, "You need a key to open the trunk and the locks. And the windows are controlled once the car starts." So she was convinced that that was a sign from her loved one. Who are we to disagree, right?
I know.
If you rule out the physical explanation, sure.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring up a point when you say, "Well, who are we to say if it's yes or no?" And I think my message to people out there who are thinking in these terms, if you think it's a sign and how that makes you feel, take it, go with it. I mean, that's, we're in a business, well, business, we're in this exploration where the skeptics are telling us that it's all bunk and that sort of thing, and that the medium readings are doing something trickery. And I always say, okay, sure. Maybe that's true. And we don't know if it's true or not. But when I see the results, when I see the change in people and specifically in their grief and how much better it makes them feel, it just, who cares if it's real or not? If it's a relief for you, that's what's important.
Mm-hmm.
I
have a skeptical friend that we all know who didn't care for that explanation. it has to be proven scientifically. But, you know, I go with the good feeling and the relief of grief.
I've seen people who go to counselors. They go to, and they get therapy, which is a wonderful thing that'll help. But when you think of what you pay for a visit to a therapist and how many years you'd have to go every month or however you go and all the money you put in, and then I see somebody with a one reading from a medium who gets instant relief, where's the money? Where does it make more sense?
Yeah, well, we all know the powerful effects that some of the things that we talk about can have on people's grief, whether they be after-death communications or signs or dream visitations or medium readings. These are all things that can change one's belief and outlook and make grief just a bit easier. You know, I read an interesting post. I, like you, part of many different groups doing the work that we're doing. One of them is a reincarnation, group, which is monitored by Dr. Jim Matlock, who we've had on the show before. I have not checked out this statement, so I can't verify its source. But somebody had posted that it's a fact that more boys are born during and after major wars, and no one knows why. So the implication is that, because there's so many deaths in a war, and they're predominantly, male, that all these people are, coming back pretty soon afterwards, as males. I have no way of, I had never read that before. That very well may be true. I have to look into it further. The only thing that disturbs me or I question is that we know that people often come back as a different sex. They don't necessarily come back as the same in the same gender.
That's true.
You know, so, but it would be interesting if anybody did a study on that, you know, to see if, you know, when there's mass casualties, you know, and we know reincarnation, I think the average span is like 18 months after a death. And plus the fact that people are more likely to come back quickly, from everything that I've read, if they died suddenly, like in an accident or, you know, some sort of unexpected tragedy. So that very well makes sense. It'd be interesting to find out.
You know, that begs another question, when you say that it, you know, does the gender matter? And that made me question, well, is there gender in the afterlife? I mean, do you... You're an energy being when you shed your body, and that that being is just a being. It's not male or female, is it?
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think gender is a human classification, you know, for lack of a better word. You know, I don't think there is gender. I don't think we look upon each other with any gender in the worlds to come.
I know somebody will say, well, you know, when I'm at a reading, they say, I see a gentleman behind you, or I see a woman behind you.
Yeah.
And, but that's only because spirit will come through in a way that the sitter will recognize them.
Right.
If I, I see an energetic being behind you. Oh, yeah, that's my dad. No, you're not.
Yeah, because it's all about the evidence. So you're right. I mean, that would be a logical explanation for that. You know, while we're talking about reincarnation, there was another question, you know, do people ever reincarnate into non-human form? You know, it's interesting because, you know, I've posed that question to, you know, to mediums. Like, I'm involved in a research project now, and that's one of the questions that we posed, you know, and most of the mediums that we asked were very specific in their answers that humans only reincarnate into human form.
Really?
But there were, even though it wasn't the majority, there were quite a number of mediums that said that, yes, that you can, you know, come back and non-human form, which would mean, you know, an animal or somebody with a, you know, a sophisticated, you know, consciousness, you know, so that's interesting. I have no idea, but, you know, a lot of people always ask that, right? I mean, could that be my loved one when they see, you know, an animal? So I don't know the answer. And there's no consistency among the mediums, really. Although most of them say that it's really human to human, so I don't know.
You know, can I just, it just occurred to me when our son was in high school and his friend's mom passed away, and we hadn't been aware even that she had died, and they were neighbors, and we were getting into our car, and the dad came driving by, and I said, oh, how's Betty doing? And he goes, oh, you didn't hear, she passed away. And I was, you know, stricken that I did not know this. But he was driving around the neighborhood with a dog that had appeared on his doorstep as soon as his wife had died, trying to figure out whose dog this is. And the dog did not want to leave their property. So it, you know, I was like, wow, Betty worked quickly to get you this companion. You know, now that could be the influence, not the actual, the dog was perhaps not Betty, but we do know, you know, when we see a cardinal, we go, well, that's not your loved one, but your loved one influenced the cardinal to fly your way. But I always thought of that and thought, wow, Betty came back to bring comfort to the family.
Well, you know, I read a book. It was a woman wrote this book, and her brother had died, and she was getting communications from him. And so she wrote this book, kind of a quasi-channeling, where he was telling her different things. And the reincarnation thing came up, and he told her in this book, yeah, I'm thinking maybe I'm just going to come back as a tree and just live in the forest for as long as that. So I don't know. This particular spirit seemed to think he could come back as it. I think that your energy could come back as any living thing, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
and clearly people have different opinions on that. You know, even the monks, you know, we think that mediums have this total understanding of the way the thing, and they have questions, you know, themselves. And I'm seeing in some of the responses that there's quite a divergence, you know, of opinion. You know, I mean, the mediums are consulting spirit for answers, but and I also, which was quite a surprise to me, I saw, you know, one medium talk about how one of her guides is not from this planet, from another, an alien from another planet, you know, is giving her information. So one thing we all have learned is to keep an open mind to all this stuff, you know, everything's connected and we can't even imagine, you know, what awaits us.
And I love that about it. I like the mystery. Why do we need to know? We might hear too much stuff and we don't want to see that or experience that.
Yeah.
Let's just look forward to the mystery revealing itself in time.
We had a question. I hear about people straddling two worlds. How would that work? And I assume that this person meant straddling two worlds when they were near death. That's the way when you really hear that. So how would that work? I guess there's a lot of explanations, but what we believe is that when somebody is getting ready to pass, their soul, you know, or consciousness starts to lift and starts the process of separating from the physical body. And so they sort of have a foot in the dense physical world and the ethereal spiritual world. So that's what we think. You guys agree?
I know in that book we often refer to, Testimony of Light, the woman who was communicated with after she passed, while her friend, who happened to be the author of this book, was visiting her, and she's in her hospital bed, she says, it has begun, that she was feeling the process starting. And I know, visiting with my mother in the hospital right before she passed, and we didn't know she was about to pass, but 96 and a half years old, it was probably something we all mentally knew could happen. But I've mentioned this before on the air, that for a week before her actual passing, and then when she was in the hospital the last couple of days, she was talking up a street to unseen visitors, and it became clear from listening to the conversation, they were people she knew from another lifetime, or not another, in within her lifetime, who had passed before her. But I just remember some of her comments. She goes, oh, you know, the red-haired man, he was going down the stairs, and it was like she was on the telephone, and I was sitting in the room listening to her on a telephone, just hearing her end of the conversation. And it was remarkable. And she would even cough at times, sort of, and then, oh, excuse me. You know, it was like being polite while she's having this invisible conversation with whoever it was on the other side.
Yeah. And how long was that before she passed?
It started about a week to the day when she that's realized that it was time to have her. She couldn't also begin to suddenly not be able to walk. It all just happened from a Thanksgiving Thursday going into, and the conversation started that night, and her legs gave out that night. And by Sunday, we were realizing we better have her looked at in the hospital. And when she got to the hospital, she had moments of clarity with us, but it soon just sort of moved into this not communicating with us, but just having our other conversations, so much so that the woman in the next bed behind the curtain couldn't get any sleep at night because my mother was just jabbering away all night long. But it was about a week, a solid week.
You know, I mean, we talk about all these experiences that people have, you know, but sometimes we lose sight of other people who don't see the same things that we're talking about. Because there was a question, you know, many people say that being with a loved one while they are dying is a spiritual experience. My experience with my dying loved one was anything but spiritual. So what is it that's spiritual? Is her question. And I understand where she's coming from. I mean, if your loved one is, you know, totally physically and mentally incapacitated, they may not be able to express anything, you know, and then all the loved one is seeing is the painful part of, you know, dying is not pretty, you know. So, but I mean, first, the obvious, I mean, you could say it's a spiritual experience because the person is moving to the world of spirit, you know, but the other thing is, you know, maybe it's just that intense feeling of love that's passed, you know, back and forth, because that's all that really matters, right? You know, at that point, that in and of itself is a spiritual experience. But then others are lucky. I mean, what a blessing that you just told us that story. I mean, so, and there are a lot of people and, you know, countless, you know, stories like that. But, you know, I understand, you know, why somebody might even be angry, you know, at such a thing, you know, it's spiritual, but I think there are reasons for it. And Raina, what do you think?
Definitely. It reminds me of my mom, who we were with her when she drew her last breath. And like you said, she wasn't conversant. She was unconscious. She'd been unconscious for a couple of days. And I had always promised her that I would be there for her up until, right throughout. And yet in the back of my head, well, I was thinking of, you know, I was in the Hollywood in my mind. I'm thinking, oh my God, I've just committed to a horror film of watching my mother die. And I'm thinking, whoa, how horrible is that going to be? And again, as you say, fortunately, she had lived a good long life and that sort of thing. So it wasn't a shock by any means. And because of her suffering from her leukemia, it was a relief. But I was really struck with how it wasn't a Hollywood horror moment. And it was, and maybe as you said, you feel the love. And I was struck with just how natural it was. It wasn't unnatural at all. I mean, it's one of the most natural things that happens on this plane. You know, people get born, people die. So I was really struck with just how calm and peaceful and it was. So I can see how people would, on the one hand, think that that was a spiritual moment. And I guess I felt that way as well.
And, you know, we had a couple of friends, actually, they were male friends recently who shared a similar experience. They know our beliefs and in our friend group, no one really talks about this or asks us too much, but because they had lost parents, I guess they felt comfortable talking to Tom and I about it and say, you know, that when I experienced what I experienced with my dad, I was just so moved by it. And he knew that we were a safe couple to talk to about this because of our beliefs. But I think that's one of the big problems with just the way, you know, individuals are. We don't want to talk about death. So we shun it. We, you know, no, we don't want to have those conversations. But if you could have those conversations and be more open about the conversations even before your loved ones die, then hopefully more people could have that peaceful transition. Yes, I understand there are tragic deaths all the time due to, unfortunately, you know, all these fentanyl poisonings and all those sudden deaths where you don't have the chance. And I definitely do not want to make anyone feel badly that they didn't have this loving passing that we've experienced. But if it is at all possible to be with a loved one as they passed and just feel peaceful and send them on their journey, I think you would experience what we're talking about. But I feel badly now that I even said that, because we know we all know so many of the deaths you just can't be there for or do anything about. So I apologize if that was a little too insensitive, because I did not mean it to be.
Here's just to switch gears. Here's an interesting question. How can I tell if my thoughts are my own or if they're received from another source?
Oh yeah.
That we could talk about that probably, you know, for hours. And I really don't know. I mean, it's even more complicated than that. If you receive thoughts from another source, would that be from the collective consciousness, you know, of people that are living, or might it be from a discarnate source? You know, so we don't know that our own thoughts emanate from our brains, you know, or whether all of our thoughts are coming from this interconnected, you know, universe. It's a mystery.
Oh, I'm definitely a proponent of that, because I can preface this with a story. Melissa's mom was having a conversation with a friend of mine who actually does clowning. And he was talking about an adult clowning act that he does, where he had a body-sized condom that he would put over himself. And he said, oh, and it was hilarious. And Melissa's mom turned and goes, you think. And so I'm always, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I got the brain chatter that Mo talks about, the monkey brain that's always chattering. And I'll be thinking about something and talking. And then another voice will go, yeah, oh, yeah, or you think, or what about that? And so I will contradict myself in the space of 3 seconds. And either I'm schizophrenic, which may possibly be true, but I just say that there's a spirit in my ear, you know, arguing with me.
Yeah, well, you know, who knows? And what a great Halloween costume that would be.
Guys, no.
Yeah, well, Tom always comes up with those good ones. So. Let's see. Does believing in an afterlife help you to cross over? We certainly think so, because we were talking about, you know, the moment of passing and how some people, you know, might be fearful of it. You know, some people might be more accepting of it. And I think a lot of it has to do with one's beliefs and convictions. So if you think you know where you're going, or if you believe that you are going some other place, you might be a little bit more accepting, you know, of the process. Whereas if you don't, you know, believe in an afterlife, I think that there would be more fear involved. And of course, we alluded to this as many other factors at the moment, the passing. I mean, how much pain is one in? You know, I mean, you know, if one's in terrible pain, yeah, they're accepting, you know, and they don't really care whether there's an afterlife or not, you know. But, you know, we know that studies have shown that those who believe in life after death do better in their grief than those who don't. And I think the same would apply to those that are in their own passing. You know, those who believe they're going someplace have an easier transition than those that don't. Makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. You have that story to tell that I know many listeners, loyal listeners, have heard before about your mother and her comments.
Yeah, well, actually, what came to mind when you were talking about this, there was a movie very early in Dustin Hoffman's career, right after he did the Midnight Cowboy. He did a movie called Little Big Man, where he was, I don't know if he was actually a Native American, but it was took in the setting of Native Americans in that. And he was talking to one of the elders, and he was about to go off to fight in a battle. And the elder was telling him that the elder, he wouldn't be there when the guy came back. And Dustin Hoffman's character was like, oh yeah. And the elder said, it's a good day to die. And sure enough, he did pass it. But that the Native Americans firmly believed that there was an afterlife, and where you could sit and you could say, well, yes, today is a good day to die. And without fear, you're going to the next adventure. In fact, that's what I told Melissa's mom in the hospital. You know, she's lying there and she said, oh, look at me, I hear him in the hospital. I said, well, you're ready for a new adventure, aren't you?
And we have our friend Annie, who's been a facilitator at some of our retreats. And Annie had been a caregiver for my mom briefly before she passed. And Angie, with all of her knowledge and metaphysical understanding, I believe they were her angel cards or oracle cards. And she had my mother choose one. And this was probably just a week and a half before she died. And my mom drew a card, and it had, I don't recall now if it was an angel, but it was like, lift your arms and fly. And my mother said, oh, I don't know what that means. But Annie was like, oh, I think I know. And she made a point to call me right away and let me know and remind me about it afterwards, because Annie felt quite strongly that Mom's spirit had an understanding of what was happening, even though Mom and her present self did not.
Yeah. This was an older question I don't think we ever got to. I hear mediums talk about protecting themselves before beginning a reading. From what? What is out there in the world of spirit that they need to be protected from?
Have they seen these scary movies?
Yeah. Well, you know, so here's the thing. I mean, you've heard it. I mean, I've heard it a million times from mediums. That I've asked them over the years, you know, why is it that I never hear anything negative coming through in a reading? And that is a common answer, you know, that we get, that the mediums say, I ask my guides, you know, to surround me with light, and so that will negative information will come through. But I've also had conversations with mediums where they said that there is no such thing as negative energy or evil in the afterlife. Those are human traits, and that we shed those when we shed the physical body. But some of those same mediums that told me that also tell me that they protect themselves with white light before a reading. So it doesn't quite mesh, you know. I mean, because if there was no negative energy, then you shouldn't have to protect yourself, you know, why? So I kind of believe that that there are, you know, some people just have, you know, such dark clouds in their physical lives and such, you know, sinister behavior and horrific, you know, behavior that they have sort of a darkness to them, you know, and it takes a while for that darkness to lift, and it lifts eventually, you know, with help. But I find it hard to believe that, as most of the mediums say, that there is no such thing as dark or harmful energy on the other side. What do you guys think?
I you know, just with all that we've talked about and some of the experiences that we've had.
Yeah.
I don't think there's this black, white, yes, no, but a blend. Personally, in my own life, I don't like to believe in things are evil or bad. But then when we, and I don't shouldn't have said but, and yet we also hear the stories about people who do horrific things. And that sounds pretty evil to me. So I don't, you know, here we're just exploring ideas. And I don't ever want to just have a definitive answer. This is the way it is. And have yeah. people believe us. I think we don't know. We don't know all this stuff. But I think personally, I never did typically think to protect myself because I just kind of naturally felt protected.
Yeah.
That I had nothing to be protected from.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Tom, what do you think?
Well, with everything that we do and what we talk about, I like Bob, I'm analytical and I need to see the evidence. Show me the evidence. If it makes sense, then I'll run with it. And that's how I formulate a lot of the opinions that we talk about on this show. And I can say after 20 years of watching medium readings and that sort of thing, maybe it's because they protect themselves ahead of time, but I have never seen a negative experience from a medium or coming through from spirit. I've certainly never felt it. So I have not seen or felt or even read about evidence of evil and negative spirits affecting us in any kind of physical way.
Yeah.
Now there are, you know, poltergeists, you know, that are throwing things around the house and that seems like that's pretty negative and destructive. But according to our friend Lloyd Auerbach, that's not even a spiritual thing. That's more of an energy thing coming from within a human source. So, you know, that's the closest I've come.
Yeah. There was a question in deaths that are premature, such as an accident or a murder or somebody that's young. Is there a moment of conscious choice to let go versus to fight and stay? So, I mean, it's obvious, like in certain accidents, I mean, death is instantaneous, right? So regardless of how the death occurs, we still believe that there's a life review. Right. So, you know, there may not be an option, you know, to come back, you know, if the physical body is no more. But they still, you know, so there may not be a conscious, you know, decision. You know, others where death may or may not happen, maybe there is a conscious choice. And that comes from that same, you know, life review. So, you know, it's really hard to say, right? What do you?
I know, and I don't, and I, you know, already thinking about some of the thoughts I've expressed tonight, I'd hate for any parent to think that their child had a choice and chose not to remain with us in this physical world. So I don't even want to weigh in on that, but what do you
think?
Well,
there are a lot of evidence on this front. Number one, when you say death is premature, I think is the wrong word, because you've all heard the expression, when your number's up, your number's up. I mean, and we've also heard about you make the decision before you even get here. You make a soul contract. I'm going to come to this planet. I'm going to live here for 21 years, and then I'm coming back. And so you've made that decision ahead of time. So it may seem like, oh my gosh, 21 years, all of a sudden, they're gone. Well, that decision was already made for them. The other flip side of that is from what we've seen about people with near-death experiences, they make the choice to stay on the other side, but they say, oh no, it's not your time. You have to go back. And they're annoyed. Well, wait a minute. This is much more enjoyable here. Don't send me back to that cesspool of an earth, you know? So yeah, you don't have the choice to either stay or go. You're going to go when you've contracted to go.
Here's a question that's short and sweet. My question is, are we going to meet again?
We are. I know it.
Oh, you know, that reminds me of David Johansen, who has a radio show. He puts in little quotes, and he goes, and one of them that struck me was, is there life after death, and is this it?
Right, yeah. Well, we gave a short answer to that, saying, you know, yes, you know, but you know, it is a, I mean, we can't expand upon that, you know, because the evidence seems to point to the fact that everybody is reunited. It may not happen. I mean, usually it happens from reports, you know, kind of very early on. You know, you're greeted by your loved one in the afterlife. Sometimes though, you know, people report that it doesn't happen for a while, you know, because maybe our loved one, if there are different levels in the afterlife, levels of frequency or vibration or enlightenment, you know, maybe our loved one, especially if, you know, physical time has elapsed, maybe our loved one is at a much higher sphere and a higher vibratory level, and it's more difficult for them to, you know, to come and greet us. I mean, that's a possibility too, right?
You know, I'd like to think that like-minded people who care about each other and perhaps will meet again in what I like to call a soul group, like-minded souls, will meet again. And I think anyone who's concerned when we say, will we meet again? It depends on who the person is, because as we know, what we've heard through certain readings, when a loved one comes through, maybe someone within a family that you didn't care for very much or harmed you in some way.
Right.
People want to think that they're going to meet that person again. Now we know from our mediums that the person has evolved and felt remorseful and amended their ways, but it's still probably difficult to look forward to seeing somebody like that.
Yeah, I think that those meetings occur because of the love bond that exists. You know, if there wasn't a strong love bond, like somebody that they disliked terribly and didn't love, that the chances of seeing them in the afterlife were probably small, right? You would think. Yeah. You know, I'm a little angry at you guys because you both look very dapper today. You know, Tom with his nice shirt and you with your top and everything. And here I am in a T-shirt. So, you know, you really are not making me look good, you know.
I thought we matched, Bob. I thought.
Yeah, well, maybe, but you look a lot better. So you have a gig tonight, Tom? Or is it
Melissa put it in my head that we're a podcast.
Okay.
And I know this is being recorded. I don't know visually. I think visually as well. There's some place on the internet that you can actually watch us. And
yeah, you can. So I know you're a classy guy.
I'm always wearing this pullover polo shirt. And I remember my granddaughter when she was about four. making comments about, you're always wearing the same shirts. So I figured, okay, today I'll just put on a different shirt. And now everybody's looking at me.
Well, listen, for the next show, something's got to give. So maybe you dress down or I got to dress up. So, you know, we can't have this next time.
I'll go back to my polo shirt.
Billy won't be watching.
Yeah. All right, well, let's read our global peace prayer. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And we truly hope that one day science is going to prove it.
That's a wrap. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.
Good night, Bob.
Good night.